Hello and welcome to Comment with me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh. I'm standing in for George Galloway today as George is off on his travels. Okay, let's cut to the chase. The US presidential election campaign is in full swing, but are there any real policy differences between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney? Or are the differences about rhetoric alone? Obama has disappointed many during his first term as president, failing to close Guantanamo Bay and conducting murderous drone strikes in the Muslim world. On the other hand, Romney may take an even more hawkish foreign policy line, with staunch support for Israel and staunch opposition to Iran. And talking about the US government, we're also going to be discussing the murderous drone attacks the United States has been conducting in Pakistan. Around 3,000 body bags, most of them probably civilians, including women and children, not counting the dead in the rest of the world. That should get you angry. And in the week when a Muslim man was convicted for criticizing British soldiers on Facebook, we'll ask, is the British state spying on Muslims? But me standing here on my own talking to myself isn't fun, so I need your calls. So pick up the phone and get in touch with me. Vent your spleen, tell me what you think, and I promise I'll prioritise callers who don't agree with me. The number is +44 208 601 4555. If you want to SMS me, you can do it on +44 780 000 8066. And you can email me on comment@presstv.co.uk. Right, first of all, most analysts say that Barack Obama was roundly hammered by his right-wing opponent Mitt Romney in the first presidential debate last week. Although Obama is still leading in most of the polls, it does look like it'll be a close-run race. So what's the difference between Obama and Romney? And what will victory mean for the rest of the world, given America's history of invading and occupying other countries? One friend told me this week, it's a bit like choosing between a crocodile and a shark. What do you think? OK, now that I've got that off my chest, let's go on to drone strikes in Pakistan. On Wednesday and Thursday, US drone strikes targeting so-called militant bases killed 15 people in a tribal region near the Afghan border. The attacks in North Waziristan were the first since a peace rally was staged last weekend against drones. The attacks by unmanned US aircraft targeting so-called terrorists are deeply unpopular in Pakistan, which says they violate its sovereignty. However, is the Pakistani government doing enough to stop them? Finally, 20-year-old Azhar Ahmed was given a community order earlier this week for condemning British soldiers on Facebook. He complained that the soldiers had brutally killed, raped and harmed innocent Afghan civilians. He said British soldiers should die and go to hell. He swore at the soldiers and he called them scum. And he was convicted for his musings. Meanwhile, members of the Muslim community are furious that another man, who's believed to be a serving British soldier, hasn't been arrested despite police complaints. In a Facebook posting late last year, Scott McHugh vowed to shoot what he called towel heads when he returned to Afghanistan. He went on to refer to Pakis, while his Facebook friends gave full vent to their casual racism. And there's plenty more racists where he come from. So is the British police doing anything about Scott McHugh and his mates, or are they only interested in persecuting and prosecuting Muslims? Also, Azhar Ahmed's Facebook conviction may be an example of how the British police, MI5, are aggressively monitoring the Muslim community, and especially the internet activity of young people. There are accusations that the state is infiltrating mosques, communities and families, monitoring Facebook and other communications. So what do you think about this? Does it make your blood boil? Have you been spied upon yourself? Give me a call if you have. OK, I'm hoping to take a lot of your calls today and a lot of your emails. And I'm hoping that you'll be ringing me in and saying whatever you want to say. We have a first caller online. He's Adam. I'm not sure where he's calling from. Adam, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from London.
Okay, Adam, what would you like to talk about?
I'll be talking about the drone in Pakistan, the American killing machine in Pakistan, and then the British soldiers or the authority spying Muslims in Britain.
Go ahead, make your points, Adam.
Yes, I think that it is high time the Pakistani government wake up and smell the coffee, that what the Americans are doing in Pakistan is not the proper way of tackling terrorism. Meanwhile, the American government is under the carpet sponsoring terrorists all over the world. you look at what is going on in Syria today, the Talibans in the Al-Qaeda in Iraq and all over the world have been recruited to go into Syria to just kill or destroy the infrastructure and ruin the government and the people of Syria.
But Adam, if I can stop you there, getting back to, let's stick to Pakistan. You say the Pakistani government isn't doing enough about it. What can they do? They can't take on the United States, surely.
No, they can't take on the United States, but there is no any international convention that allow any country to to invade a country's airspace. Look at what happened in Turkey yesterday. That is totally violation of international airspace or international aero business.
So you believe Pakistan should exercise its sovereignty. Thanks a lot, Adam, for your call and points well made. I think we're going to go to Pakistan now with Mohammed. It says he might be in the UK or Pakistan. I'm not quite sure. Mohammed, where are you?
UK, mate.
OK, so Mohammed, what would you like to talk about?
Pakistan, the drones attacks in Pakistan. Well, basically what it is the American government wants to pick a fight with Pakistan, right? OK, for simple reason, Pakistan is the only Muslim country with a nuclear bomb. And they don't like that. Israelis and American doesn't like it, or the European country. So therefore, they're just trying to pick a fight with Pakistan so they can get the basically base in Pakistan so they can control the nuclear bomb and then...
So you think that all this stuff in Afghanistan and destabilizing Pakistan, it's really about the nukes in Pakistan?
Yes, of course it is.
They don't like a Muslim country having nukes.
No, of course they don't. They don't want any... Look what they're doing with Iran. Because Iran is progressing so much, right, in the Muslim world, they don't want that because they don't want any Muslim nation to be progressed in the anywhere. Because as soon as they're progressing, because then we don't need to ask them for anything. We can stand on our 2 feet. Look how many sanctions they have put on Iran. And yet, when it comes to Israel, there is no sanction at all. America vetoes it, right?
Okay. Okay. So thanks a lot, Mohammed, for making your points. I believe we have Zuleika from Manchester. Zuleika, I believe you want to talk about your father, who was convicted of terrorism, and he was the subject of an undercover police operation, basically a couple of undercover cops pretending to be Muslims stitched him up or got him convicted of terrorism. Is that correct, Zuleika?
That's right, yes.
So, briefly, tell me what happened, Zuleika.
Well, this was back in 2009 when my father was arrested, but he's been holding dawah stalls where he basically distributed Islamic literature for free to non-Muslims. And he's had that for about over 10 years across Manchester. He met hundreds of people in Manchester from all walks of life through these stalls. And that's when two undercover officers came up and pretending to take an interest and eventually actually embrace Islam.
And it was a fake conversion?
Sorry?
It was a fake conversion.
That's right. Well, at the time, obviously, we had no idea. We thought that they really were interested genuinely, and they had embraced Islam, and they actually took the Shahada in the local mosques.
And it was all a big pretense. And these guys spent, what, a year in your house?
That's right, a whole year, coming to our house for long hours, eating with us, having dinner and asking many, many questions to my father.
And you didn't suspect anything?
Not at all, because what happens is my father is he's very helpful and general. When it comes to new Muslims, he wants to help them as much as he can, because obviously it's a whole new lifestyle that they embrace. I mean, this is what they abused.
I suppose you think they entrapped your father. How did they do that exactly?
First they befriended not only my father, but his other four co-defendants, one of whom was also an imam and another my own brother. The imam was released, and my brother, he was acquitted from the same trial. What they did was, over the months, they befriended all these people, and then they would ask them political questions and go into issues such as, oh, the Muslim Ummah is suffering, and we want to do something about it. I can't go into details because my father is appealing.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah.
But basically, they were trying to get him to talk about jihad and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Zuleika, did you feel kind of betrayed What do you think about these guys pretending to be Muslims and it turns out they're undercover cops? Is that, you know, how do you feel about that?
It's disgusting how, you know, we feel extremely hurt and offended and even shocked at the fact that the state would even consider such a thing. Not only consider it, but go ahead and, you know, even celebrate by awarding them for such a fake and deceitful procedure.
But they're just trying to catch terrorists, Zuleika, right?
My father is not a terrorist, and all he was doing was doing dawah. That's all he was doing, and this is what they didn't like.
And Zuleika, I've got it written here that they're trying to take your house as well. Why would they want to do that?
Well, under it's the first time it's happening in Britain under the Terrorism Act 2000, Section 23A. They say that if there's terrorist activities that go on in a particular property, even if the property does not belong to the convicted person, they can seize that property and pay the proceeds to the magistrate's court.
But you weren't, sorry, I don't really understand this. So you weren't convicted of anything, or the family wasn't convicted of anything, but they're just trying to take the house away from you, basically you guys as well, yeah?
Yeah, there's three generations in this house, so the house has never been in my father's name. It's been in my mother's name, and they want to take it because conversations took place in this house.
Zuleika, we've got to move on to other callers, but do you think this spying on Muslims and these kind of tactics, do you think it's widespread in Britain?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you think these undercover tactics targeted against Muslims, do you think it's widespread in Britain?
I think it is definitely widespread. You know, the counter-terrorism unit have frequent meetings with the imams in Manchester, and they've said it for themselves. It would be foolish for us to think that there aren't undercovers out there in our communities.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much for that very interesting call, Zuleika. I think we have another call online, Glenn from Portsmouth, and Glenn wants to talk about the US elections. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hello. Well, the US are created and conducted illusion of choice. In fact, I think there's no choice at all between someone like Obama and someone like Romney. But there is a minimal marginal choice in the sense that if the American voter elected Obama...
Yeah, the line's not great, Glenn, but what I think you're trying to say is there's not much difference between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Is that the case?
That's the case, yes. They both represent the same predatory interests, bankers, the militarists, you know. Only it could be said, I think, that Obama's factionally less hawkish than Romney.
So it doesn't really matter who wins the presidential elections. It's going to be more of the same for the rest of the world.
Oh, sure. I don't think in any essential, quintessential sense it doesn't matter, but I think in a superficial way it might, in the sense that Obama will be less likely to indulge in large-scale military actions that will be second nature to Romney, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call, Glenn. So the presidential elections happens on November the 6th, I believe. It'll be interesting for the rest of the world, given, as I say, given America's history of interventions in many countries, bombing them, invading them. Will it make any difference if Obama or Romney becomes president? We have a couple of emails, I believe, and we can go to the comment wall. Of course, you should always send me emails. The address is comment@presstv.co.uk. I'll read them out. I promise. We have an email from Caroline in Strasbourg, France, a place which I know well. She says, "Good evening, sir. This man in England who is in prison for saying something hateful on Facebook." I think Caroline is referring to Azar Ahmed. He's not in prison. He was convicted, but he was given a community order. Anyway, he should have been taken a photo and put on flags and marched in front of Parliament in London for freedom of speech. I don't agree with his comments, but I disagree more with England's dictator-style ruling against Muslims. Well, it seems that Caroline seems to be arguing that you can say whatever you want to say on Facebook. My problem isn't with Azar Ahmed's conviction necessarily. I think maybe he shouldn't have said what he said. Ultimately, he was calling for the death of British soldiers in Afghanistan. He's a British citizen. My problem is the fact that this law is not evenly applied. And there are many racists out there cursing Muslims, criticizing Muslims, printing the most vile stuff about Muslims on Facebook, Twitter, on Press TV's site, on other Islamic channels' site, and nothing happens to them. And I know for a fact the police have been contacted by them about these people, and nothing has happened. So there's a blatant double standard there. I think we have another email, and we can go to the comment wall to read that email. Who's this one from? It's from Craig in London. If you are so against Muslims being covertly investigated, then please explain how you think covert terrorism in the UK should be dealt with. Maybe the police should send Teletubbies into mosques and ask the terrorists to come forward in exchange for a lollipop. I respect Muslims, but I want to know why the moderates are so afraid of investigations. Well, you know, some people say that Press TV doesn't include differing opinions. Well, I think that one was a differing opinion. I would say that, yes, there are terrorists in the UK. There are people in the Muslim community that maybe aren't so good. Maybe they want to blow up buses and trains. But the fact is that the resources spent on that threat, which is actually quite small, should be proportionate to the threat itself. At the moment, the whole community is being targeted. The innocent as well as the guilty are being targeted. And it's not just, I say go after the terrorists, don't go after the whole community. We have Tony who wants to talk about spying in the UK. This seems to be a very popular topic. Tony, go ahead, make your point.
Oh, hello. Hi, Mohamed. Nice first time talking to you. It's about the double standards. There's no more shame left, you know, in the British government. Now, the reason why I say this, Mohamed, is if you can remember back, as I do, much older, a man called Pinochet who murdered so many of his people in Chile. He came over to this country. He was given immunity from prosecution. The Spanish people wanted him to face the music, applied for an extradition order, which was refused. The Chilean people were up in arms, so what's going on? This chap has left, blood was dripping, you know, on his hands, the amount of people he killed in Chile. But now we see last week, they extradited Abu Hamza to the United States. Isn't it shameful, the double standards? They don't have got any more shame left in these people with their double standards. What do you think, Mohammed?
Yeah, well, I think it's all about politics. I think that's a very good comparison. General Pinochet, obviously, he had a lot of backing. He had the backing of the state, Chile. It was very controversial trying to extradite him. Whereas Abu Hamza, obviously, he's been demonized in the media, in the British media, the tabloids, always concentrating on his hook. You know, in other, arenas, that would be called discrimination against disabled people. Yet the British tabloid media seems to fixate on this guy's hook instead of perhaps feeling compassion for him. This guy's been demonized, this guy's an easy target, and ultimately he was extradited from this country with the backing probably of British public opinion. But I don't think that British public opinion would have backed that extradition if they were properly informed about his case. What do you say, Tony?
Well, I think the double standards begin to filter through them. Not only there, we see the United Nations having a go at Iran, you know, putting sanctions against Iran, although this is making Iran stronger, and Iran is winning more respectability throughout the third world country, and the economy is doing well, never mind what you read about and what we hear about, where America, who's imposing the sanction, is going down. So you see the double standard there. Israel can flout regulation after, or resolution after regulation, United Nations, and get away with it. But yes, poor Iran was only trying to, you know, do things in their country for the benefit of its people, and they keep alive.
Thank you very much for your call, Tony. Much appreciated, but we're going to have to try and get as many calls in as possible. We can go to Mohammed, who is in Iraq, a place that I have been to a few years back. What part of Iraq are you calling from, Mohammed?
Thank you, sir. I am from Iraq, from Baghdad.
From Baghdad. Yes, I know that place very well. And you want to talk about the U.S. elections. What does it mean for you guys in Iraq?
Yes, sir. Please give me some moments. I hope that. As an Iraqi guy, absolutely, I never care who becomes the president of the United States. This is American people's choice. Absolutely. But what I care is the foreign policy about the future president. The difference between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, they have weak points about the foreign policy. Absolutely, the weak point about Barack Obama is his vice, Joe Biden. and his ideas about dividing the Middle East over religion grounds, especially in Iraq, and this is absolutely acceptable. For Mr. Romney, oh, sir, Mr. Romney is looking for trouble. He's trying to challenge the world about defense muscles, about Iran nuclear case, about Palestinian case. But in last words, I think that with my respect to American people, they have never cared for the president who treats about foreign policy. They
Mohammed, basically the American...
...put them up from the economic struggle with they have now. Thank you, sir. I apologize if there is a problem in my English language. Goodbye, and my greetings to you and to Mr. Ken Livingstone and to Mr. George Galloway. Goodbye, sir.
Okay, I would like to have asked you more questions, Mohammed, but that's no problem. So Mohammed in Iraq basically saying there that it doesn't matter who wins the US presidential elections, whether it's Obama or Romney, not much will change in Iraq, which has obviously been invaded, destroyed and occupied and divided. I went to Iraq when there was no sectarianism, when the country was whole. I'm not a fan of Saddam Hussein. By no means am I a fan of Saddam Hussein. But the fact is that the country has been completely destroyed over the last 10 years since the invasion. I saw it for myself. I saw how the American soldiers in that country humiliated the locals. Anyway, that's enough from me. Let's get on to Paul, who is calling from Canada, and he wants to talk about drones. Paul, go ahead.
Okay, I'd just like to start off by saying I'm a veterinarian with 14 trips to Iran. I'm a much better person for all the people I've met there, and I'm sickened by the North American media that demonizes Muslims and victimizes Jews. And the issue that all three issues, as well as 100 others, are all tied together once people understand the project for the new American century, which was the plan for America and Israel to take over the world. And in the issue of the U.S. election, the world needs to pray and do everything possible to get Obama in, because Romney represents the worst possible case scenario, because he's more liable to press the button for a war with Iran, and God only knows, you know, where this could happen.
But Paul, I've got to stop you there. The world should pray for Obama victory. What has Obama done in the last 4 years? You know,
he hasn't
constrained.
This.
If I could just finish, he hasn't constrained Israel. He's backed pro-Western dictators during the Arab Spring. You know, he hasn't closed Guantanamo Bay.
Okay,
why should we pray for an Obama victory?
I'll explain that, okay? Because you have to understand this to look at the big picture. This man, if he's turned the direction around from Bush, you have to remember to keep in power, he stands with snakes at his feet, all over his feet, with the Jewish lobby and all the people, the neocons that are around him, okay? I believe that once this election's over, that he's going to spank Netanyahu, and we have a chance to finally solve the root problems, which is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and this nuclear issue isn't even an issue. Okay, and
you believe Obama is, sorry, I didn't quite get that. You believe that Obama is actually going to solve problems if he's reelected?
Absolutely, he's going to try. Okay, he's only one man, and like I say that in the scope of you have to understand the world that he works in. Okay, he's surrounded by these neocons and this Jewish lobby that are all over him, trying to destroy and distort.
So what can he
says.
Do, Paul, if the president doesn't have any power because of all of these constraints? What can Obama possibly do?
Okay, go back the last few years and put Bush in place, and where would we be? He'd be pushing the button on Iran. Same with this clown. Okay, he's trying to do the best he can to slow down wars. And I'd just like to quickly address the drone issue. It's interesting how, you know, that 9/11 was the day that the so-called war on terror began. And if we want to get to the root of it, you got to ask what causes the problems. And, of course, the problem is the terrorist country of America and Israel and all their so-called friends, which most of them are extorted. And these people continue to walk into countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan with their drones. And it's interesting how when they report the news on CNN, a little child gets shot by Al-Qaeda, and it's a big story. But when they kill, you know, seven little Afghan children or Pakistani children, you barely hear a blip in it, because they're Muslims and the value of their life is nothing. And
okay.
The flying issue, it's all connected.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Paul. That was an excellent call, and thank you very much for calling all the way there from Canada. Okay, today on Comment, we're talking about the U.S. presidential elections. Is there any difference between Obama and Romney? Paul doesn't think so. Or Paul does think so. We're talking about drone strikes on Pakistan, and we're talking about the British state and its discriminatory treatment of Muslims. Pick up the phone, give me a call, tell me what you think. I'll be back in a few minutes after this news break. Welcome back to Comment with me, Roshan Mohammed Saleh, standing in for George Galloway, who's on his travels. Today on Comment, we're talking about the US presidential elections. Is there any difference between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney? We're talking about drone strikes on Pakistan, and we're talking about the British state and its discriminatory treatment of Muslims. Pick up the phone, please. Give me a call and tell me what you think about these issues. In the first half of the show, obviously a lot of people concerned about the revelations of Muslim spying on the Muslim community, which has become pervasive over the last 10 years, especially after the 7/7 attacks. There are bugs in mosques. There are bugs in offices. MI5 officers and policemen are trying to recruit Muslims to spy on their own community. We know this because it's all in the public record. What do you think about that? First of all, we're going to go to Asim, who's in London, and he wants to talk about drones. Asim, go ahead.
Hi. Basically, the few words about the Waziristan march that was done by Imran Khan and the party.
Yes.
And the idea was just basically to highlight the tragedy that has unfolded over there in that part of the land for the last 10 years. And the manner in which this exceptional brutality has taken place.
How many people have been killed by these drone strikes, Asim? Are they mainly innocent people?
The current estimation is that in the last 10 years, there have been 334 drone attacks. And out of that, 98% of the casualties are civilians, women, children.
But the U.S. would say that they're catching bad guys. They're killing Al-Qaeda and Taliban.
Well, if they are catching Al-Qaeda and all the bad guys, it has taken them 10 years, and absolutely there is no validation of that. It has been such a tragic, basically, an experience, basically, for the land as well as the people, and that was the reason Imran Khan has highlighted to the whole community, the international community as well.
And Pakistani people must be furious about this.
I think the word furious is not enough. The whole psychological composition has taken a drastic turn. We've had to basically put up with the instability within Pakistan and for the war, which is not ours.
And Asim, just finally, you know, the Pakistani government obviously condemn what's happening, but people are saying they're not doing much about it. Can they do anything?
I think the only thing that will change place now in the next couple of years, we need to have a proper and a good leadership, and these people cannot do that.
Okay.
Only when Imran Khan comes into power and the rest, then it will happen now.
Okay, thanks a lot, Asim, for calling me and making those points. I think we're joined now by Hamza Ahsan, and Hamza is the brother of Talha Ahsan, one of the five British Muslim men who were extradited to the United States to face trial over there last Saturday, I believe. They're accused of terrorism. Hamza, your brother Talha, how is he?
We don't know. We've never actually heard from him. We have no idea. I don't think he's even been given the right to, you know, talk back to his own family. All we know is that he's in, you know, solitary confinement in an American prison.
What are the conditions in that prison, Hamza?
Sorry?
What are the conditions in that prison he's in?
You're put 23 hours a day without any human contact in a 7-foot cells, and that's just at the moment. And then after any conviction, he'd be put into like an ADX Florence, which is a supermax prison, which is extremely isolated.
I should stop you there, Ham, just for a second, because I should tell the viewers that Talha Ahsan basically spent I don't know, about 6 years or more than that, perhaps, Hamza can correct me, in a British high security prison without charge or trial. This man has not been charged with any crime, 8 years I'm hearing, and he has not been, he's not been in front of a court of law. His family are saying that he should be charged and put on trial and face a court of law in this country because he's a UK citizen. But the British government have refused to do that. Instead, they've extradited him to the United States. Hamza, I believe your brother has a condition called Asperger's syndrome. What is that exactly?
Asperger's syndrome.
Yeah.
Just like Gary McKinnon, who wasn't detained. I don't want Gary McKinnon to be extradited either, but since they both have the same health diagnosis, why is the non-Muslim one, not being detained, and not that any of them should be detained.
Hamza, you must be
vulnerable, extremely vulnerable. Especially, half of all prison suicides take place in solitary confinement. Within America, people have been taking lawsuits because people develop forms of psychosis and self-harm and suicide.
So, Hamza, do you feel that your brother is at risk of suicide?
My brother's extremely vulnerable, and these conditions don't help in any way. A medical legal report said something of that ilk, that he was at risk.
Hamza, can I ask you a direct question? Your brother is accused of running jihadi websites, effectively funding jihadis who kill people in foreign countries. Is your brother a terrorist?
No, my brother's not a terrorist. He denies all charges and wrongdoing. Just to clarify, my brother's accused of having some marginal association with the website from 97 to 2001, so something that's been defunct for, 11, 14 years ago. And it was about Bosnia. It was about the Chechen War for independence of Russia. I mean, do Muslims regard those people as,
Well, I guess many Muslims would regard them as freedom fighters, wouldn't they? But can I ask you, Hamza, your brother's going to get a day in court now. He's going to get a fair trial in the United States.
He's going to be detained in solitary confinement with no access to his family or any human contact for over 3 years. So in conditions that, as I said, the United Nations describes as torture, that the UK is just complicit in, and then be forced into some sort of plea bargaining. Because under the American judicial system, 98% of people, plead guilty in federal cases, because you're basically told you can
just to get a lighter sentence.
15 years in solitary confinement, or you can die in solitary confinement. And they did the same to Fahad Hashmi, brother Fahad Hashmi, who was one of the first extradited cases.
Hamza, I know your family and yourself must have suffered greatly over the years. Has this left a bitter taste in your mouth about British justice?
Britain has sold out its legal sovereignty and made itself seem as the 51st state of America.
And Hamza, I was following the British media coverage of your brother, and he kind of got lost. The coverage of him got lost in the furore surrounding Abu Hamza, who's a widely hated figure in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Do you feel that your brother was unfairly associated with Abu Hamza?
The Home Office it wasn't just the media, it was the Home Office itself that issued press statements like Abu Hamza and the others, even though they're three separate, distinct cases. And, so the Home Office got away with detaining British citizens for the longest period without trial in history, and got away with putting its own citizens into torture conditions just through these sort of stereotypes and sound bites and misleading, mislabeled. So it's highly irresponsible and damaging and hurt the entire family.
Okay, Hamza, thanks for your call. I hope you get in touch with your brother soon. Thank you very much for calling me. I'm going to have to move on now to Mama Noor. I hope I pronounced that correctly, who is in the UK. And Mama Noor wants to talk about the US elections. Go ahead.
Hi, Roshan. It's Manoj speaking.
Manoj, sorry.
To speak with you. And I did want to speak about the election. I am ever so gobsmacked as why every time that an APAC-appointed senator comes up with some suggestions of sanction against my homeland, Iran, Mr. Obama, a couple of days later, signs it into a law. And until these Americans don't get rid of these APAC, who are actually Israeli lobbyists, controlling the Washington, we could never ever appoint a president or have a president ruling America, which is a superpower, who is genuinely an honest American.
I mean, Manoj, I know that there is a lot of money in U.S. elections. Both the main candidates, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, are basically accused of being in the pocket of lobby groups who fund their campaigns. And when they become president, obviously, there's a payback. There's no such thing as a free lunch. So, Manoj, if I can just ask you very briefly, do you believe that AIPAC, the pro-Israeli lobby, is effectively controlling the U.S. president?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. And when are we going to eventually get rid of this group and have America as America? Because I know Americans, and Americans are some of the very loveliest people you can meet and you can associate, and they're very cultured. Now, how can we get America to understand? I mean, every day I write a tweet to Mr. Moon and Mr. Obama, for those who wants to see it on tweet, and ask him to deal with Zion nukes.
Manoj, I'm going to have to cut you short. Thank you very much for your call. Manoj there from Iran, and obviously the West is trying to destroy the Iranian economy at the moment. I think that's very well known through their sanctions. And they've been launching economic warfare on Iran and other countries, Gaza, etc., perhaps softening them up over a series of years in the hope that something disastrous will happen. A widely condemned policy there. We have another caller online, Shakir from London, who wants to talk, I believe, about the spying on the Muslim community. Go ahead, Shakir.
Hi. I seriously have some deep concerns regarding this. Now, I live in central London, and at this moment of stage, I feel as if I can't do anything on the social network without possibly being questioned at a later stage. This is, you know, for many reasons. I've come to a stage where I believe, you know, this is a direct attack on us Muslims. You know, we don't have anything. We can't say anything without it being taken to another level. Where's freedom of speech gone? And another thing I've realised on Facebook, you have these groups who insult Islam. They have many followers, and
Shakir, I mean, I'll just stop you there for a second. I mean, I'm actually making a documentary at the moment which looks into this whole area of spying on the Muslim community. And as I said before, it's a matter of public record that the government is throwing huge resources at monitoring the internet, monitoring young Muslim people, especially those in schools, colleges and universities, monitoring leaders of the Muslim community, monitoring women, because they think that women control the children who will grow up one day maybe to be terrorists, monitoring leaders because they believe that the leaders can control the community. And they are placing bugs in mosques. They are placing bugs in offices. They are trying to recruit Muslims who are willing to work as their agents. However, I do believe that we shouldn't get paranoid about this. We shouldn't think that every Muslim is a spy or a potential spy. We shouldn't think that every Muslim leader or woman or young person is a potential recruit for the cause of evil. Basically, that's maybe what they want us to do, to be disunited, to be paranoid, to suspect each other. So we shouldn't fall into that trap. Shakir, go ahead.
It's not regarding Muslims spying upon Muslims. I'm talking about the government spying on us, local government. Like, for example, the local government in Camden, you know, they get the local councillors to pay a lot of attention on young Muslim youth and find out what they're about. And ultimately, these records go back to them and they get watched. And unfortunately, we are in a state where we can't really say what we want to say, you know, out of frustration. You know, if I say something to them on Facebook, for awareness, you know, this could be held against me.
But if you've got nothing to hide, Shakir, what's the problem? If you're not a terrorist, what's the problem?
The sole reason is because after the extradition, it really hit me that, you know what, these innocent guys who haven't been charged have been flown over to another country. It could be me tomorrow. It could be X, Y, and Z tomorrow.
Okay.
Who knows?
Shakir, point well made. Now, I think we have a couple of emails, so we can go over to the comment wall and read out those emails. Please send me your emails, and I promise I will read them out. This one is from Mohammed from London, UK. Hi there. The main reason that the British police spy on Muslims is for entrapment, just to get someone to talk about jihad. In 2 days, there will be 10 officers at your door with dogs. The Daily Mail will report it, and LBC will be vilifying you. By the time you get to trial in court, the judge has made up his mind. Britain is a great country, but if it doesn't like you, you're on your own. That is, in fact, exactly what the police and MI5 do. They get people, undercover cops in there. They get you to talk about jihad in the hope that you'll, you know, say something inflammatory, maybe, you know, basically in anger, and then they convict you. Then they get you in front of court. Even if there was no plot, even if you just said it off the top of your head, even if you didn't really mean it or have any intention, they'll still get you. One email, we have another email to read out on a comment wall, so let's go back there. Who's this one from? It's from Khadija in Bolton, UK. Salam, I can't believe these stories about the spying on British Muslims. I mean, I believe them, but it's so worrying. It's a form of limiting our freedom to express our political views. If we have a view about jihad or about politics, it shouldn't mean that we should be locked up for it. If we instigate war, then maybe we would be fair game, but not for merely expressing it. Britain has become so totalitarian. It's sad. Okay, well, Khadija, thank you very much for your email. As I say, Muslims, we should be aware of this. We should know it's going on. We should open our eyes, but we shouldn't be paranoid. I believe we have another caller online, a caller from Cairo in Egypt. Osama, what would you like to talk about?
In relation to the U.S. presidential election.
Yes, go ahead, Osama.
It's very, very clear now that the Republicans have a very, very good chance of winning.
Well, polls are neck and neck, I believe, at the moment, but maybe Obama is slightly ahead.
There's a very, very good possibility that, Obama will lose. In the debate, he looked very disinterested, almost as if he is just simply fed up of the whole job. And that's partly due to his own mistake
Osama, can I ask you, what do you make of Obama's record in office, his first term?
Well, he didn't really do anything. He didn't fix the economy, so internally he'd failed. Mind you, it was always going to be a difficult job because George Bush left him with a train wreck.
On a foreign policy,
really, he just carried on with George Bush's foreign policy, except he did it in a very much more subtle manner, a much more intelligent manner.
Well, I think you're being slightly unfair there, because he's taking troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, isn't he?
Yes, but that's only thinking ahead in the long term to prepare for a war against Iran.
Basically, Iran remains America's number one enemy in the region, right?
Iran remains number one target, and the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and Afghanistan is simply the prelude to a war against Iran. It is not an if, it is a when.
And if Romney becomes president, that war might happen sooner.
Whoever comes in, the reality is people have got to wake up. The war against Iran is coming, whether it's a Republican or it's a Democrat. I think a Democrat of the like of Obama is able to garner much wider support internationally than a Romney would. Because in essence, as I say, Obama did not change anything in U.S. foreign policy. And the test, and it's quite interesting, when he was first elected, he ran on a huge amount of rhetoric in relation to perhaps a new détente with the Iranian regime, you know.
And that didn't come about. So, Osama, kind of wrapping it up now. So you don't really believe this is a crucial election for the world? It's much of a muchness.
No, it's all the same. I mean, how is it going to change? How is it going to change anything on the street in Cairo or in Damascus or anything? It's not going to do anything. It's just simply which is going to be more belligerent and who's able to garner more support.
Okay, Osama from Cairo, Masalama, goodbye. We have Nazim from London who wants to talk about Pakistani drones. Nazim, go ahead. What's your point?
Good evening. The point is just following on from what Osama just said, if I can use that as a lead-in. He said that Obama's a bit more settled than Bush. I disagree with that. Under Bush, we had one drone strike every 43 days in Pakistan. Under Obama, there's one every 4 days. It's killing indiscriminately, loads and loads of innocent people. For every militant claiming they're killing, it's killing at least 10 innocent people, and a lot of them are children. We've seen the attacks on weddings. We've seen the attacks on funerals. And the UN actually has stated against this and said that, investigations need to be made and America needs to explain itself. Pakistan, for that reason, has also said the same. But we're talking about a lily-livered president here. We thought we had one in John
what
Major.
What can he do, Nazim? I mean, he can't, shoot down the drones, can he? He can't take on the USA.
It's not about taking on the USA. And those drones were initially taking off from Shamshi Air Base in Pakistan. It's only recently they've stopped being taken off there. What he can do is get off that seat and go back to London and go chill out there and go back to Switzerland and enjoy billions in his Swiss bank account.
Nazim, we can't verify that he has money in any Swiss bank account here. But Nazim, I mean, your country seems a total mess, doesn't it? I mean, is it heading for civil war? Is it heading for breakup? As a Pakistani, you can't be very optimistic, can you?
It's not very optimistic, but I have optimism in the people of Pakistan, believe it or not, the people on the street, the vast majority of which the very vast majority of 180 million people are very peace-loving and just want to get on with their lives, their daily lives like anybody else.
Okay, well, Nazim.
But Imran Khan is not the answer. That's for sure.
All right, okay. So we have one pro-Imran Khan, one anti-Imran Khan on our show. What is the answer if it's not Imran Khan? Very briefly. What is the answer if it's not Imran Khan? Very briefly, Nazim.
The answer will be homegrown, not outside brought in.
All right. Thank you very much, Nazim from London. Thank you much for your call. I think maybe our final call tonight. We've had so many calls in. Tony from Greece, who wants to talk about the accusations or the spying on Muslims, I believe. Tony, go ahead, make your point.
Good evening. I guess I'm calling for the first time. I just watched the press TV to see, Anyway, why do you think that UK and the European countries are against the Muslims?
I didn't say they were against the Muslims. I just said that basically there is proof and a lot of resources thrown at spying on the Muslim community. It's justified in the name of national security. It's justified in the name of catching terrorists. But ultimately, Muslims believe that, it's getting innocent people as well as a few guilty people.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? Do they do the same thing to the Hindus or Buddhists or Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses or Christians?
I don't believe so. I believe that it's targeted mainly at Muslims, even though the terrorism threat is probably greater from Northern Ireland than it is from Muslims.
Is it justified to them that the Muslims are a threat to the society because they think, and I have seen in the news that wherever Muslims become a majority, they want to place the Sharia law into effect.
So you believe that Muslims want to create Sharia law in the UK? That's ridiculous. They don't want
it's
to do
ridiculous.
That.
Ridiculous. So the news that I watch is...
When has any Muslim called for Sharia law, apart from a few nutters? When has any Muslim called for Sharia law in the UK?
Okay. You don't believe that this will happen?
That we can go on forever, Tony, but I'm sorry, we are out of time. I would love to have continued that call, but I can't. Okay, that's it from me. I should say that any views I expressed during this show were entirely my own, not Press TV's, and certainly not any government's. I hope you enjoyed the show. George Galloway will be back soon, and please stay tuned to Press TV from me. Bye-bye.
Hello, if you just comment your name and the face of your number, and just make sure that your television volume is set up to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know, I know. You need to directly put through this, your phone number, and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?